Unity is strength and assured success.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Last night, ladies and gentlemen, I was on top of my game. I went out, filmed a meeting about Aotearoa is not for sale, Aotearoa being the native language for New Zealand, because there's the corporate scumbaggery filth like the government of selling us out like there's no fracking tomorrow, including with fracking. And I also was in a play called The Danger of Listening, which is, of course, government-financed, interestingly enough, and got to speak about a whole lot of stuff that I normally speak about because we just wrote down our conversations and then read them out to the audience as part of the Arts Festival. And then I went to a bar to see an old friend of mine whose number I'd lost because I'd just changed phones, and we had a really good time, and we went and we had a few drinks, and we talked about a whole range of different interesting topics. I was really on top of my game. I was like airplane peanuts the entire night. Complimentary. I was giving people compliments. My goodness, that's a fabulous dress. Mate, you have done your hair very nicely. That is a well-manicured beard, etc. And you know what's interesting? I really made people feel happy. I saw lots of smiles. And there was even one dude from Africa named Kumbi who could not stand. And his girlfriend and all these other people around there were too weak to carry him. And I was thinking to myself, excuse me, are there any other 6'4" burly individuals that can actually carry this guy back to his apartment? No, there isn't. I don't know this guy, but they need me. So I did. I carried him with the help of his friend all the way back to his apartment. I tossed him on the couch, forced two glasses of water down on him, took off his shoes, pants, stretched him out, put a blanket on him, a pillow under his head, and the garbage bin next to his head, just in case. And then I said, thank you very much, my work here is done, took two glasses of water, and left. In hindsight, maybe I should have asked for some money. And in fact, they did offer me $10, and I said, mate, I'm not going to refuse your money. But then I walked out without remembering to ask for it again. And interestingly enough, I didn't have to carry him close to 1,000 metres or something like that. We could have actually just taken a cab because I believed that the taxi drivers wouldn't take somebody in such a condition as has happened to me and various other friends before. It was this guy's first time and he needed somebody and I was there, so I took responsibility. Now, they may not know who I am. They asked who I am, and I said, Google me. Because when you Google Vinnie Eastwood, there's only one Vinnie Eastwood that comes up. It's me. So it'll be very interesting. At the very least, there is a heck of a lot of people out there in this world who believe that, well, who basically have no longer have faith in man. And I think that one person who does something that he doesn't have to do just because he's needed restores a lot of people's faith. Something to think about. And that's something I really did. My very special guest is Bob Edelman. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie. Nice to be with you.
You're very welcome. Now, you had a website that you're a writer for. Could you give it a quick plug for the listeners?
Yes. I write for thenewamerican.com. It's a print magazine and a website. The website is thenewamerican.com. About 500,000 individuals, unique individuals like you, come every month to the website to read what about 50 writers like me have to say about current affairs. And I do mean that literally, as well as economic and political events from a conservative, pro-American, limited government, free enterprise point of view.
Mm. Hey, in fact, I was explaining to somebody what the difference between conservative and liberal was last night. Conservative means you don't interpret the Constitution, basically. The Constitution's the Constitution. That's how you make your laws. Liberals are like, well, Constitution, it's just a scrap of paper, mate. We can just make stuff up. Let's just make a new amendment. Come on. Amendment to take away your rights.
It's a living document, you see. It's flexible. It bends with the ages and interpretations and circumstances. And absolute truth doesn't exist. It's all in the mind of the neighbors and the current conversation and so
and Goldman Sachs.
You're absolutely right.
And Goldman Sachs employees.
Yes, that's a very, yes. So, yeah, we look at it from that point of view, and the website's growing like mad, and I'm very glad to have a hand in pushing it along a little bit.
Well, what we'd like to do on this show is to give you an opportunity to vent, perhaps. You know, we want to sit here and you obviously work very hard, Bob, right? And you're obviously not working for the dark side, right? So, what we want to do here is entertain you, give you a little bit of fun, and a little bit of a platform to speak about whatever you want.
Well, we could pick up the article that I was just talking about briefly before we came on the air. What I do is find things that annoy me and then write about it.
See, I find things
try to prove why I'm annoyed. But this big settlement, we were just talking about this foreclosure settlement that resulted following 2 years of investigation by the 49 of the 50 states and the big banks and the robo-signing and all of that stuff that cost people their homes and lots of money. And when I saw the settlement, it first came out, I think it was the UK's Telegraph, said that it was going to be $40 billion. Now, I knew something was wrong with that number because the amount of losses sustained by people owning real estate in the United States is something approaching $700 billion, and they're going to fix it and make everything right with $40 billion. And then I read a little further, and they said, well, no, it's not exactly 40. It's more like 26. But of the 26, 17 is a credit that we're actually going to do is – we're going to rewrite the investors down who bought these mortgages. And so we're going to give them credits, and that takes care of 17. And that leaves us with about $5 to $7 billion of actually hard dollars that are going to go from the banks to some 750,000 homeowners that got screwed.
Now, that sounds like creative accounting.
It even gets better. The retribution or the replenishment or the whatever you want to call it comes in two forms. If you happen still to own a home and you're underwater and you happen to be one of these select 750,000, you have the chance to refinance so that if you're $50,000 underwater right now, you can refinance to the point where you're only $30,000 underwater. I'm not quite sure of the benefit of that, but the other part is really cool. If it's too late and you're out of your house, they've foreclosed, and you're living in a trailer, they're going to cut you a check for all your difficulty and pain. And it'll be, and it's an indeterminate amount, somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000, and it'll be paid out to you over the next 3 years. And thank you very much.
Are you freaking kidding me? That is insulting.
I didn't make this up. I'm just the writer.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it is fraud. It's a four-letter word that's spelled fraud. Just give you this. David Stockman was the budget director for President Reagan. Yes, he's still alive. He's still around. He's about my age, so he's really old.
I can tell.
The way he put it, he said there are 110 million households in this country. 35 million are renters. It does nothing for them. 30 million own their homes free and clear with no mortgage. It does nothing for them. Of the 50 million with mortgages, 40 million aren't underwater and have recently financed or have no reason to finance. So basically what you're doing is you're picking out of a pool of 10 million households with mortgages that are underwater, and you're basically going to come in and offer them free money and ask them to go away. That's the deal. Now, who wins in a deal like that? The banks get to write off these bad notes. They get to get rid of the legal problems, the potential lawsuits that would cost them dearly. They pay for this. The profits of the banks that are involved will recoup this in one quarter's earnings. And nobody goes to jail. Now, it's really cool. They've committed fraud, and they now have determined that the cost of committing fraud is $2,000 per loan.
Well, then how much money do they make per fraud exactly? It's only good business practice to keep doing what keeps making you money.
It's a rounding error. I got a quote from somebody else here. Let me see. Oh, Dayen. Yeah, David Dayen, D-A-Y-E-N, firedoglake.com. He said, we've now set a price for forgeries and fabricating documents. It's $2,000 per loan. He said, the cost is trivial in comparison to the average loan, which here is roughly $180,000. So the settlement represents about 1% of loan balances. It's less than the price of the title insurance that the banks failed to get when they transferred the loans. It's a fraction of the cost of the legal expenses when foreclosures are challenged. It's a great deal for the banks because no one is at any of the servicers going to jail for forgery, and the banks have set the upper bound of the cost of riding roughshod over 300 years of real estate law at $5 billion. What a world we live in.
Well, it's an increasingly interconnected world, and what's interesting is that you can now scam entire nations at a time.
Yes, that's what's annoying. This is the beauty of this, is that this is a little tiny peek under the rug. You know, sometimes when you pick up the corner of a rug and you discover you have termites or ants or something.
Or gargantuan hissing cockroaches.
Yes, but all you want to do is pick up a little tiny corner. And the minute you discover what it is that you've got underneath the rug, you have two choices. Put the rug back. Or fumigate the place. Oh, well, I'm in the fumigator business.
Yeah. Well, see, I choose to be a little bit more brutal. I'm in the I'm on the boots stomping and guts all over the floor type ruthless business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a little more genteel.
Well, see, like for example, we've got a fly problem in our house, right? And I am a mad dead shot with a fly swatter. You would not believe the amount of flies I kill every day. It's like a hunting sport. I think I actually derive some kind of sick pleasure from wiping out vermin.
It sounds like.
And I think that I'm naturally suited to criticize politicians then because, hey, they're vermin supreme.
Well, but they deserve it.
Yeah. This is the thing. Justice, ladies and gentlemen. Justice is something everybody likes to see. Injustice is what everybody just winds up getting.
I see. That's beautiful. Another article I just finished writing, and this will appear probably Monday on the website. It's called Obamanomics, The State of the Union, and Reality. Now, Obamanomics, of course, is whatever passes for intelligent thought in the other side of the river in Washington, D.C. It's usually covered with Keynesian philosophy, but what it simply is insanity run wild. They call it Obamanomics, and it has to do with trying to stimulate an economy with paper money that by which we will create prosperity. Now, on the face of it, that's where it comes from. So this article was great fun. I started with his State of the Union message, in which he claimed credit for the rebound that is allegedly taking place in our economy.
The rebound!
Oh, I know. He said we've had 2 years of job growth, and he said, quote, the fastest job creation since the year 2005. In fact, if you're clever, now and again you'll see popping up on your screens as you're going through the internet a graph showing the recovery in jobs since Obama took over. That's part of his reelection campaign.
Well, I'm sure it's paid for with campaign financing. Well, I'll just say before you continue, I really like the title, Obamanomics, State of the Union, And I like reality. how you've kept it separate and reality, because the State of the Union is definitely separate from reality these days.
I couldn't agree more. Gee, where have you been all my life, Vinny?
Well, anyway, I've been in New Zealand, man.
Well, what I did, of course, was talk about this alleged recovery, the rate of unemployment and employment. And I began to look at some of the things published sometimes by the government, but more likely others who have a better handle on things. For example, it's touted that the unemployment rate is around 8%. Well, along comes Gallup. Now, whether Gallup is part of the problem or part of the solution is a separate conversation, but at least they are not funded directly or belonging to the government. And what they do to find out how the economy is doing is they go out and they call 30,000 people and say, how are you doing? And then they record the results. Interestingly, their results are a whole lot different from the government's results. And they come up with the fact that there's about 20% unemployment instead of 8. But we wouldn't want to push that too hard, because what do these 30,000 people know that the government doesn't? So then we look at the real estate market and the rebound and housing prices and the homeowners, the builders and so on, their stocks are going up and the worst is behind us. And then we look at something from RealtyTrack, another one of those private institutions that are paid to get a real look at the real world. And they're saying that the number of foreclosures in the year 2012 will approach 1 million. Well, as compared to 800,000 last year. Yeah. That doesn't sound like a decrease.
Well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but we're coming to a break, and I'm sorry that you might be foreclosed on in the next 4 minutes as well. My very special guest is Bob Adelman. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the show that's all about history repeating, because the things that have come before are coming back again. And of course, as history always tells us, you don't need a cast of thousands. It actually has always, throughout history, been the small, determined minority that has really made the difference, because they're the ones that work day after day for a better world. If you're one of those people, good on you. You're contributing more than 96% of the rest of the population. My very special guest is Bob Adelman, one of those people. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Vinny. A pleasure.
Yeah. And could I ask you a question? What actually got you interested in all of this? I've come to call it scumbaggery because, you know, it's the connotations, the actions and meanings and motives of scumbags, and they do a whole. There are many forms of it, of course. But what actually perked your interest enough to actually want to write about it?
What a great
Did something
question.
Bad happen to you by no, some financial well, terrorist scumbag?
No, I've managed to avoid that so far. I don't use the word scumbaggery. I use the word deceit. And I discovered deceit at a very early age. It happened, I can tell you the year. It was an amazing year, but the year was 1967. I was 27. A friend of mine suggested I read a book about Pearl Harbor. It was called Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace by a revisionist historian, Harry Elmer Barnes. Well, I knew nothing. I didn't know revisionist. I didn't know historian. I didn't know perpetual war. I didn't know I started reading the book, and the book explained how Franklin D. set up the Japanese to attack Pearl Harbor so that FDR could get into the Second World War. The American people were isolationist, and they needed a false flag event, and he created it out of whole cloth. I was not only mad, I was astonished that I didn't know anything about this when I considered myself well-read after 6 years in college. Another book, if somebody's really interested in a better one and a shorter one on that whole subject, is called Day of Deceit. Proves the point that FDR was a deceit.
Yep, and that's why I don't trust. And that's why I don't trust presidents or the Speaker of the House, because they all sit in deceit.
It serves them well, unfortunately. Now, there are a few exceptions, and I think Jim DeMint comes to mind, and, of course, Ron Paul. Somehow they have managed to swim in the filthy pond without getting wet or dirty.
What about Kucinich? I don't know how they've done that. Dennis Kucinich?
I don't know that I'd put him in the same category. But anyway, that's just those are two that come to mind. So that you asked the question how it started. And since then, I've been trying to reduce my ignorance and make up for lost time.
Yeah, I think the same thing is true of us all. Once you realize that you've been lied to your entire life, you realize that you have to go through all your studies again, except this time you don't have a teacher. You have to teach yourself.
Yes, it's like going down the road the wrong direction, 90 miles. And then you discover not only are you on the wrong road, you're going in the wrong direction. You have to turn around to get back to even.
And you waste so much time by having to travel that extra distance. It's like you've gone twice as long as you had to in order to be half as far.
Well, and then people along the way are saying, you're on the wrong road, you're going the wrong way.
And you're like, I don't need a map. I'm a man.
Precisely. So anyway, I was talking about this thing with Obama. I got to the end of the article, and it occurred to me that we had another Great Depression in this country that lasted about a year and a half. And what was the difference between that one and the one that we're 4 years deep into and not out of yet?
And it's the depression.
Are you ready? It's the Depression of 1920. Mm-hmm. Now, who gives a rip? President Harding? And the Depression of 1920, well, it was just as bad as the one we came out of. Unemployment soared to about 12%. The gross domestic product fell like a stone. The index of industrial production was off by a third. And yet, by the summer of 1923, the economy was back. The unemployment rate had dropped considerably, was back essentially to where it was before the recession. What was the difference? And the difference was that the government didn't try to do anything. It stepped aside and let the market fix it. So it was a great fun to write that article and remind people that we've been down this road before, and the history is a great teacher if we just know where to look and are willing to read and listen.
Yeah. And when the government gets involved in things, what I've found is interesting about, say, small communities versus government. I was having a conversation about this last night, Bob. Is that, let's say you're in a small community, how corrupt and how powerful could the most powerful person in that very small community actually possibly get? Not enough to take over the next town, at least. So,
yeah. Right.
And not to mention, if let's say if you were a burglar in that very small town where everybody knows who you are, what's your likelihood of actually being able to get away with the crime?
Not really.
Okay, and so think about this. Think about the global scale. Let's talk about global theft, because as far as I'm concerned, these banking foreclosure crises and all of that kind of stuff is essentially a product of what happens when people get too much anonymity, okay? You know, I can brainwash everybody into thinking that this derivative trading is real, like it exists. No, we didn't have the State Gaming Commission come after us and try and regulate us as a gambling institution when we first came up with these derivatives when we repealed Glass-Steagall Act, which was instituted after we crashed the economy the first time we started taking up toxic derivatives on the stock market. No, that never happened at all. You know, nobody's getting educated about all of this kind of stuff. And there's a reason why. It's because these people can make up so much money that they could just buy out the media with nothing.
Well, let's go down the road on the media for a minute. And I've got to tell you that I'm running on a short leash from a time point of view. I indicated earlier that I have another deadline, don't we always? And I need to kind of begin to think about heading, rounding third and heading for home.
We have 8 minutes left in the segment, and then we can let you go, Bob. If you can give us that much of your time, I'd really appreciate it.
That's fine. I want to talk briefly about the media and what I've learned and see if you agree and if others would agree or disagree. The media is set up to misinform by using something called, and forgive me for being esoteric, the Hegelian dialectic.
Problem, reaction, solution.
The idea is to control the conversation so that the real conversation can't take place, or if it is, it's considered to be extremist and irrelevant. A perfect example is Mr. Rupert Murdoch. He happens to own News Corp. He's currently in trouble right now in England, but that's okay. He's supposed to be the conservative. He owns Fox News and Bill O'Reilly and Judge Napolitano and John Stossel. And so that represents the conservative conversation. And then along comes CNN and CNBC and the others, and that is the liberal conversation. But by setting the parameters, who's talking about freedom? Who's talking about limited government? Let me speak directly about this, because one of the annoying things that have bothered me that I can't write about, just for lots of reasons, is Bill O'Reilly. He appears nightly on Fox News. He is, in my opinion, the most corrupt of the commentators by successfully, and I mean that, they pay him millions of years to direct the conversation successfully away from real things like freedom and national sovereignty and limited government and so on. And what he does is titillate and tantalize on side issues. And I must say he does it very, very well, to the point where some of my conservative friends think he really has something to say when all he's doing is directing and limiting the conversation. So there, I have now vented and I feel much better. And I can leave now.
Oh, wow. I thought we'd have you for another 5 minutes, but if you leave now.
I'm just But that's the beauty of being able to write, the freedom to express ourselves without the gendarmes showing up at the door, limiting our freedom.
Well, I see freedom of speech is under attack in this country a heck of a lot, isn't it? You know, it's very strange. You feel like you're in the freest country in the world, and all of a sudden, as soon as you go to test that freedom, you realize that it wasn't there to begin with.
No. Somebody once said, and I can't remember who it was, but he said, if you want to find out how free you are, push the limits a little bit. Just see how free you are. Somebody has characterized it as we are already living inside of a concentration camp, but we're free as long as we don't touch the wire. But don't you dare touch the wire. And then you'll know just how free we're not.
Yeah. Bill Cooper summed up socialism very well as basically it's about living with daddy. Now, daddy may be able to protect you. You may be able to borrow daddy's car. Daddy may keep the fridge stocked with food. But how much freedom do you have? Can you just take that car into the next town or something like that to go see a friend without asking for it? No, you can't. Do you have to stay home if your daddy wills it? Yes, you do. That's the thing about it.
Yeah.
If you've got somebody protecting you, providing for you, and you're not doing it yourself, you are beholden to them. This is my house. You're living under my roof. These are my rules. That is the inherent problem with it, is you basically, they're immature little kids. to want to be completely and utterly socialist by government nature. It's assuming that people aren't inherently good, aren't inherently responsible. You know, it's almost like they don't even want to teach that to people anymore. Like they don't see the value in it, and they only see the value in forcing people to do things for the so-called greater good, for the good of the collective. When the reality is, there is no I in collective. There is no individuality in collective. That's what I mean by that. Because what's it made up of? It's only made up of individuals. It's an abstraction. It doesn't actually exist. You can't touch a group of people. You can't touch a forest.
You see, that whole discussion that you've just had enrages me. Now, I'm a mild-mannered reporter. I don't throw things. I don't crash cars and throw Molotov cocktails. But what you just went through simply enrages me as it being so outrageous and disrespectful of human nature and our own freedom to live as God has given us the right to live. And that's why I'm in this thing. Win or lose, it doesn't matter. Somebody said, what's your plan B? Asked me about what's my plan B if plan A doesn't work. And plan A meaning educate, inform, persuade, change minds, etc. What if plan A doesn't work? What's your plan B? And I said, my plan B is to continue to do plan A.
There's only two types of lies and damned lies. And yes,
that's right. And then statistics, isn't that right?
Yeah. There's only three types of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. And if anybody's good at doing that, boy, it's got to be our elected representative. Well, our selected and then voter-frauded politicians. Yeah. Oh, we live in a messed up world, and it's hilarious, I find, because it's right in everybody's face, and they don't see it. The banks have the tallest buildings, and they don't see them. The insurance companies and the corporate banks are the only buildings in small towns now that don't look dilapidated and run down, and people don't see it. Okay. They're extracting all of our wealth, all of our freedom, and buying off everything that it means to be human, and that's something that I believe everybody should be very, very enraged about. And I want to thank you, Bob, for sharing some of your time with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Do I have another minute, or are we still?
You've got about 50 seconds.
Okay. I look for positives. I'm forever trying to find a glass that's half full rather than half empty. I ran across an interesting statistic. I don't know how valuable it is, but about 15% of those people who are intending to vote in November are going to vote for Ron Paul. Now, that is enormously encouraging. Now, it could be a bigger number, it might be less, but that means that 15% of the population, the thinking people out there, have come to that by thinking through this whole issue of freedom and limited government. And I'm enormously encouraged that that number is so large.
Me too, because in the African savannah, it only takes 6% of the herd to be aware of a predator before the entire herd is aware.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest was Bob Adelman, and we'll be saying goodbye to him. Thank you very much, Bob. It's been very exciting, and I enjoyed your company.
Me too, Vinnie. Thanks so much for the invitation.
You're very welcome. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
And gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on a native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man, expand the military-industrial complex. Annex foreign soil with chemical objects. Vex the psyop attack.
attacking your conscience. Next, your brain agrees with the offense. Political correctness, people are afraid to speak what they feel instead of what they made. I don't see black and white, I see a reason to debate. Cause right about now, a lot of lands are betrayed. A slave to the system, we need to break free. We need to burn down the Fed facility. We need to stand up and fight for the liberty. But corporate president, we need a visionary. Society is brainwashed by the distractions. Don't give a damn about the government's action. Rather look the right way, rather dream of a mansion. You a lamb to the slaughter for supporting the faction. Wake up, wake up, and preach like a pastor. Teach the youth that the president's an actor. Controlled by your
welcome
master, a shadow in the mist.
To the show that's all about keeping it bangster. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We actually will be having another guest coming up very soon, ladies and gentlemen. And his name is Andrew Johnson, and we'll see if we can actually get him connected soon enough. But firstly, I'd like to be taking your calls. The number is 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. And any questions in the chat room, any stuff like that, they'll be welcome. Okay, because I think what last night taught me, I was kind of a leaf on the breeze, and I did so much, and I met so many different people, and I imparted a lot of information to many, many, many people. And I think it was because I've got this sort of ridiculous self-confidence, and I'm 6'4", so I'm a natural leader because everybody looks up to me. You know, the whole charismatic type BS, you know. And of course, it's very easy to abuse that sort of mentality. And I do. I certainly abuse myself over it. It's quite interesting when you look at the ripple effects that you can have on people around you, the different social circles, etc. Great, great film. And I mentioned this on the show the other day, this film. And I want to mention it again. It's called I Am Fishhead. It's on YouTube. I Am Fishhead. I Am Fishhead. I Am Fishhead. For goodness sake, watch that film. The best, most comprehensive, easy to understand, modern expose on the thinking processes of the corporate psychopath. As in a psychopath that is really high up in corporate office. How the hell those people who basically make decisions at the flick of a wrist and the scribble of a pen can destroy your entire life and the lives of hundreds of thousands, even millions of other people, and have no conscious impact about that. How they influence society is they do horrible things. And each and every single one of those horrible things that they do have an effect on the people around them. And that person, when they get affected by it, it will also be with them, and they will also start to bring that into their own home, into their workplaces, these sorts of things. Injustice and anger, rage, malice, cruelty, it rubs off on people. But so does honor. So does respect. So does being genuine. And so I think last night what my mission really was to show as much respect, do as much good, impart as much knowledge and niceness and smiles and laughter and jokes that I could, so that all those people who I touched during that night with my own special magic vinniness would wind up having something imparted to them that they would pass on to other people that I would never meet. Okay, you can cause a ripple effect in society by being really good to one person, because that person will go home and say, "Man, this guy did some really nice stuff for me today, won't he?" And that person will listen to that story, and depending on the deed, it can restore their entire faith in humanity. They could have been living off the fat of the land for goodness knows how long and have absolutely no concern for the people of any kind. But when they see somebody doing an incredibly good deed just because they wanted to, not obligated, not even rewarded, just doing it, it restores their faith in the whole of humanity just by seeing one person. Isn't that interesting? And I'm not making this up. This is from first-hand experience. This is what somebody actually said to me after I told them what I had done. You know, helping a very, very inebriated person for ages back to their house and took care of them and all of that kind of stuff just because they needed me. Now, I thought that what's interesting is when you hold a pin on your fellow man, sort of, you feel as though you're above them, like they're sheeple, they're slaves, they're scum. Whereas me, I feel that the slaves and the scum, just like on a pond, rise to the top. And that is where you should focus your aggression. That is where you should focus your action. And the people on the ground are the people who are suffering under the exact same scumbaggery regime as you. They may be actively participating, but they are still not the real enemy. Because those people who are still actively participating yet are brainwashed. Easy to brainwash somebody. Can you blame a zombie for trying to eat you? Not really. It's a zombie. I'm not going to go out and get very angry about it or something like that. It's just a zombie. Another zombie bites the dust. Nobody cares, right? But for some reason, we get personally offended when we'll come up to somebody and tell them a bit of knowledge that they don't know yet. And then not only do they get really offended, but they start attacking you and calling you names, or they will just turn away from you, or they'll act disrespectful or something of that nature. Instead of getting offended, think to yourself, what a douchebag, and walk away to find somebody who does not engage in similar or in any way proportional levels of douchebaggery. Okay, it's pretty straightforward. Don't spend your time with people who are douchebags. They're not going to help you in your life. They're not going to help you learn anything. If anything, they're only going to frustrate you, and which is why you shouldn't be hanging out with them in the first place. You know, take some priority. And there's lots of people that do this. They have relationships with people who have nothing more in common than they drink beer together. They realize that when they're sober, they can't fucking stand each other. It's unbelievable. Nobody has any real connection anymore. Where are people doing missions together? You know, building a chicken coop. Really doing something. Do we always just have to waltz around as though life is just an opportunity to kill time? It's not about killing time and just having a good time. You've got to have something to show for it. You know, whether that be something that you've literally physically built together or something that you've done together that's a great story and literally taught you something. You know, it's like the movie, Stand By Me, for example. The kids could have stayed home and done absolutely nothing, but they decided to go on a mission. And they learned a heck of a lot about each other, brought them closer together. That's what the human race is supposed to be doing. Not stuck inside playing PlayStation all the time. It can be fun, and it might be part of a balanced relationship to murder hundreds of police officers in a digital format. You know, maybe that's healthy and normal. Whereas I think that, hey, maybe we should go to the beach. Or we could go do something Frack it. We could build a kite. Yeah. Who knows? It doesn't matter what you're doing. Just make sure that it's an enriching experience and you will have a rich life. Rich life. Good friends. Decent conversation. Learning something. Doesn't sound too bad after all, is it? As opposed to, I'm really wasted. And we watched a B-grade movie. And I have to do the dishes when I get home. Yeah, shirk those responsibilities. That's a good idea. That'll make sure that you advance and evolve into some description of superior organism. Become totally irresponsible. Drink 10 times your body weight in liquor. Snort ecstasy. Get copious quantities of things into your bloodstream that you never thought possible. Watch more pornography than even Ron Jeremy could. Get it all down, you boy. Absorb all the sickness, distraction, and physical feuding that goes on while you try and get something that you never had in the first place and been craving your entire life. Nurturing and understanding. I don't get nurturing and understanding, so I'm going to pollute myself, pollute my life, and punish myself for being alive. That doesn't make any sense. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. You're joining us back from break right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Seeing as we live on a planet together, you find out that everybody's got the same problems. Because the same scumbaggery filth that wish to destroy your country are the exact same scumbaggery filth that are trying to destroy mine. And so, just because we're all under attack together, it brings us closer together. We have two very special guests on the line. Stephen Cuck, Stephen the Voice, and also from the UK, the Uber Kingdom, Mr. Andrew Johnson. So, Stephen, I wanted to welcome you to the program. Welcome back. We had some,
how you doing, man?
We had some technical issues last time you were on, so hopefully by cell phone we won't have such anomalies occur.
I think we'll be just fine.
Yeah. And we also have Andrew Johnson. Please, welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, Andrew, I just wanted to let you explain just a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm in the UK, in the Uber Kingdom. That's a new name for it. I have been sort of led a fairly normal life, pretty conventional. School, you know, bit of university, bit of work. Currently work part-time for an open university in the UK, seeing students and stuff. And I started to get into all this weird stuff and the scumbaggery, as you so rightly call it, in about 2003. Heavily got involved in it, and then I'd sort of seen the scumbaggery going on and not really sort of put it all together, you know, before that. Mm-hmm. And I set up this website sort of to just dump stuff on, really, called checktheevidence.com. Set that up in, I think, 2005 or something, so I started to sort of, you know, gather all the scum up and, you know, need somewhere to put it, really. And that's on there. I try and sort of put it nicely and respectfully and sort it all out, and you can go and search it and, you know, make what you want of it. I send out DVDs and things like that. So, yeah, that's a sort of quick summary, I suppose.
Well, you know, it's a similar story to a lot of people who are popping up all over the place, Andrew, is they were living a normal life, then they realized that there was a virulent strain of scumbaggery infecting the earth and decided to take steps to do it and did anything they could and started building up an information apparatus from nothing.
Mm. Absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, you know, the odd thing is that this somehow this technology got released that we give it the general term of the internet, and I don't know how that really got out into the form that it's got out, because I think it's really quite, it's sort of like the opposite of everything else that's going on almost, you know. It's quite strange when you actually think about it in those terms. And I've just tried to use it to maximum effect, and all this sort of very powerful technology, which is obviously used to enslave us as well in more kind of automatic ways and more speedy ways, but we can also use it ourselves. And that was, you know, I became interested in technology at the age of about 16, and I've sort of, that's been my sort of main area of work, really, is looking at computers and writing software and things like this. So it's come in handy, knowing how this stuff works.
Well, it's
very useful.
It's always an idea in warfare to use the weapons of your enemy against them.
Mm, that's right. And I remember this analogy that I read in a Douglas Adams book, where he was talking about the program The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and he was sort of presented with this problem that he had to write 5 episodes of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy without any idea of what he was going to put on, because he only expected to get 1 episode done and then the BBC would sack him, but they didn't. They asked him for more. And so he thought about it from a karate point of view, and he said, well, what you do is, if you've got this 15-stone Japanese guy lunging at you, you know, dressed in pyjamas, then you have to sort of turn the fact that he's 15 stones into his problem than your problem, and you that's where you learn how to grab him at the right angle and throw him over into a you know, a throw, and then the fact that he's 15 stones becomes his problem and not yours.
I reckon that's actually a good analogy for the amount of debt everybody's weighed down with, you know. Redirect that debt energy, so that make the weight their problem, not ours.
Right. And I think if you begin to realize that a lot of this is illusory, this debt, and I think if we get a lot of people realizing that the governments are then the government's not running anything. I mean, we've already seen all around the world that the government's saying, we've got to give this money back to the banks, folks. I'm sorry, but, you know, doesn't that mean the banks are running the show? I mean, that's the way I look at it. So hopefully people can start to wake up more to that realization, you know.
Yeah. And, Stephen, you've been kind of quiet here. How do you feel about all of this? I mean, first of all, actually introduce yourself and tell the audience a little bit about you, those who don't know.
I am Stephen the Voice Cook. We actually have a website, Truth Seeker Music. It's Truth, SEEKAH, Music. And we just aim to make music with a purpose, since there's so much out there that really do not have a purpose. And we're actually fixing to come out with a lot more political stuff, or scumbaggery, as you would call it. And actually, kind of like what you said about using your opponent's weapons against them, it's kind of the same way, because for so long our world has been brainwashed by all this crap, man. And it's like they see it, they hear it, they say it, they believe it, they live it, and we're just trying to change all that. And we're going to also start dropping a lot of knowledge about what's happening in the world, man. You know, and I don't just think it's a battle with just the banking systems and what's going on. I believe it's much deeper than that. I believe that it's more or less a battle for your soul, if you really want to be honest. I mean, like, I feel that they just want to control everything, what you believe. I mean, that's why I don't care if you're Muslim, Christian, Hindu. I think you should stand up for what you believe in if you are pro-life, pro-constitution, you know, because they're really against all of that, you know.
It really is exactly as you say, and it's a spiritual war as well as a physical war, as well as a chemical war, as well as a biological war. It's a war of all wars, because they're all going on at the same time. And the problem is when you're fighting an enemy from every direction, it means that you're vulnerable from every direction as well. like the game of Risk, for example, unless you've got an awful lot really backing you up all the way through everywhere, you really do suffer the penalty of being able to have a heck of a lot of your territory taken away from you quite quickly. And I think what's happening now is those who have been engaging in scumbaggery for quite some time have overreached themselves. Their resources are spread too thin. Hitler couldn't win a war on two fronts. How the heck are the New World Order supposed to win a war on a million fronts, on 6 billion, yeah, on 7 billion fronts?
Mm. I totally agree with what it was just said there, and it is ultimately about, you know, I prefer to use the term consciousness. It's about controlling your consciousness.
And
the soul comes into it. And I think that's what it all boils down to. And I think it's not often brought up, really, because when you start talking those terms, I think it's mischaracterized as some type of religious, you know, discussion. And it goes much deeper than that.
That's what they want. That's the problem. That's why I say I don't care if you're Christian, Muslim, whatever. The fact is we're all the same race, and the way that we can stop being beat in every direction is we can stop being divided in every direction and come together as one race, you know?
I said something to somebody last night, like they were bagging on religion, like, oh, people aren't religion. I said, don't bag religion, not because I believe in all of it or not because it's without fault or anything. Just because of one very interesting random fact. Would you like to hear it? Okay, I'll tell you anyway. Prisoners of war in Vietnam, you know, American prisoners of war, had a much higher survival rate if they had a belief in God. Because there's something outside themselves that they were capable of holding on to. It's something that gave them strength, something that gave them courage beyond what the other people had, because they felt that they were all alone in that prisoner of war camp. The people who believe in God, they were never alone, or at least not in their own minds.
Exactly.
Now, I think that this actually is about a connection with your higher self, perhaps, okay? You know that I'm a man, I'm endowed, I'm a creator, I have the ability to change the world as I see fit, and this reality, however long it lasts, it's not going to get the best of me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And I think that this whole idea of creation and creating things and being able to, you know, shape things, that's the antithesis of everything that's going on. They're trying to say, well, you know, nobody's in control, everybody's in debt, and, you know, we need to make war because of all these people that are trying to take over our lives, you know, and all this nonsense, and so it's the very antithesis of that the scumbaggery seems to be so insistent upon, you know, and a lot of the creative processes have been taken out of education, so most of the educational system is geared not really towards creativity, but to, you know, just basic knowledge
menials.
Sort of like
need to know basis sort of thing.
Yep.
And what's ironic about the whole need to know basis is that everybody needs to know. Okay, I don't think that there's a single thing that is knowable on Earth that people don't need to know at some point, because you never
or at
know
least
what
have
different
the chance to believe it theirself, you know, and decide, hey, I read this and now I don't want to believe that, or yeah, you know, I want to accept this and receive it, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So it is very much, and I think when you look at the lengths that are gone to create all these situations, you realize that controlling our consciousness is very, very important to some group of people who work in a different way to us, you know. And
that's why they're so scared, because it's becoming more of an awakening. People are realizing, hey, we can change this thing just by our thoughts, just by what we're positive about what's fixing to happen. It's about to be a new beginning. And that's why they're so geared to scare us, like, oh, 2012, it's something bad. No, I feel like when there's an end to something, there's a new beginning. It's all one circle. It's about to be better, I believe.
Well, that's what the word revolution means, to go in a circle.
Yep.
Yeah. That is a good definition.
You know, and I think in the end we all come back to the beginning. I say this many times, maybe because I repeat myself too much, but the question is, how do you actually make a society last? Okay, and this is a difficulty because I've not seen anything, any society throughout history that's actually lasted. They've all kind of gone under the, apart from Freemasonry, on the other hand. They're still alive and kicking after hundreds and hundreds of years of openly being part of society and openly recruiting people and that kind of thing, yet still remaining secret.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose, you know, the analogy that I've always heard is, well, not really an analogy, but the, you know, Native American cultures and a lot of the indigenous cultures, certainly the Native Americans, I think their way of life has essentially gone on for, you know, tens of thousands of years, and because they have a way of living which is sustainable. And they integrate or rather, their way of living.
Or rather had a way of life that was sustainable until they got musketed and flu blanketed.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, there is this picture
that I've got. This is the problem. This is the problem. In order to have a sustainable life, you have to have enough weaponry to protect you from somebody who will arbitrarily come over and just take away your life so they can take away your way of life.
That's it. And then, you're sort of back to technology, aren't you? If you can develop technology to do that, you know, then you that's what, the, again, what these people are keen on. They're keen on developing advanced technology to wield this materialistic power in this,
developing
world that
or reverse engineering is the big question.
Well, indeed, there is that whole question as well, isn't there, when you actually look at all this. And, you certainly get into that. And I know that Vinny has had Dr. Judy Wood on before, and one of the few people that has, and that's, you know, I've had quite a long association with Dr. Judy Wood and her research, and that the technology aspect comes into that in quite a, well, a surprising way to most people.
And this is why people don't get it, hey? It's like if I was to show you a piece of technology that was, say, 40, 50 years in advance, like if in 1969 and I came up to you with my with an iPad, for example, and say, this is a computer, and they'd be like, oh, my God, it's magic, you know. or go to a primitive tribe with a cigarette lighter, you know, that kind of thing.
That's it. Well, that's Arthur C. Clarke's quote, isn't it? I think he was involved in Masonic circles, wasn't he? If you look at some of what's in his books, but his phrase was, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, and that's true. It's that's what it looks like, and that I'm saying that as well to add on to what you said. But if you look at what's around us. Some of it is done with technology, but most people sort of think it's real, and sometimes it's just an illusion. And that I think it needs to be borne in mind to help you free yourself from this cycle that you get into, you know, the materialistic cycle. And if you're aware of these things and how you can be manipulated, then once you become aware of that manipulation in one place, like I found with some of the stuff I've put on my website, you know, I've got various topics, health and chemtrails and, you know, various things like that. And people seem to come in, they'll look at the sky and think, what are these trails, you know, and then they'll research it, and then they'll find out about 9/11. And then they'll find out about, you know, all the cancer cures that have been suppressed, and sort of, so that means cancer's a big con then, yes.
And what's interesting is that they could find out about 9/11 first, or they could find out about cancer first. There's no rule book. This is interesting, isn't it? That's what's great about humanity, is everybody has a unique formula that will work for them. And if you can figure out what somebody's little interest is, you can just introduce them to one of those conspiracies, one of those concepts, and on their own, they will become addicted to the information, and they will inform themselves about everything else eventually.
Right.
You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the most infectious 2 hours in talk radio. Back in a minute.
Your life as it has been is over.
Radio Free Humanity on AFR. Listen to The Paradigm Shift, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Central.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, you're back. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, going out on AM, FM bands all across America and all across the world, because we're trying to bring you the information that you'll often not be told if you are not looking for it. And so we're glad that you found us all right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guests, Stephen. Now, Stephen, your last name was pronounced Cook, is that correct?
Yeah, it's pronounced Cook. It's German.
Cook. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I figured I would let you have a little bit of fun with that, so...
Yeah. Well, we were just commenting over the break, Andrew and I, about how amusing it is to know a conspiracy theorist with the surname of Cook.
That's funny. Good stuff. Well, am I a conspiracy theorist, or am I just really just reading between the lines, you know? It's like,
conspiracy theorist is another label, isn't it? So, you know.
Well, here's my label for conspiracy theorist. If you're a conspiracy theorist, it means you believe that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to gain more influence. Okay?
Correct.
So in that case, it's pretty straightforward.
If you're a conspiracy theorist, everything you see on TV, you just believe the exact opposite and you'll be right.
Well, the thing is, if you're a reasonable person, anything you see on the TV, believe the exact opposite. You know, oh, there's a soap opera. Everybody's like an 8 or above, and everybody's incredibly pretty. Nobody has any weight problems or any cancer or any stuff like that. Okay, everybody's good. Okay, believe the direct opposite of that. Everything's really, really different.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, distractions are deadly, and essentially this is what I feel is happening to us, gentlemen. In every single one of our countries, they're attempting to distract us for long enough so that they can put us in a trap and then close the door, and then we're trapped forever and we'll never be able to get out, and we'll be basically just harvested like livestock.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that their aim is to put those chips in you, man, and then they can control your nervous system. And then they can just, if you're not doing what they want, they can just cut you off, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of esoteric ways that they can get you, make you want to accept things. Like, for example, and this is just something I'm making randomly off the top of my head to be funny, for example, they invented Pringles to get people used to the idea of putting chips in their body.
I personally know that they're just going to trick us. They're not going to trick me, but they're going to trick the public into thinking that this is something you need. It's for your safety. I'm sorry, I'm not putting any kind of chip in me. I mean, but the thing is these days they can make them so small that they can just go on your ID and even access all your information. Is just a little speck on it, man. So, and I'm pretty sure that's already into effect. I mean, so it's way deeper than really we can fathom. The truth is way stranger than the fiction.
Yeah, and they're also coming up with nanobots as well.
So yeah, they could just. I got that off of G.I. Joe's, and I was that is true, man.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they can just pop. Max Egan was talking about this, is that in the chemtrails, they're actually dropping nanobots on people. You inhale them, and they start to become part of your own body.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's stories about this, but I don't know how many of them are true. You know, I'm not sure I believe all those stories, simply because I think they can do that type of thing without needing to go to the lengths of dropping nanobots from planes. You know, I think they can do this sort of thing with energy-based technology, which is probably well out of sight, you know. I've spoken to somebody, for example, I know and trust. He's in the USA, and he said that his father, when he was 12 years old, when my friend was 12 years old, and this is in the 50s, his father was working on anti-gravity technology, and they were working on space platforms. And that's in the 50s. And again, if you look at some of the research, they've got stuff that's just off the charts, and I think they don't. I don't think they really need chips to do the sorts of control that they want to do. I mean, obviously we've got other things. We do it voluntarily, you know, and you look at how much people
it's
put
it's
on
now
Facebook
admitted
and stuff like that.
Well, it's now admitted that they're putting psychotronic weaponry in what are they called, cell phone towers and stuff like that, things that can alter your mood, things that can make you feel clumsy or dizzy, right. and this kind of stuff.
You know, and I think as we've sort of touched on, I mean, the other things like the whole prescription medicine system, where you know they can sort of market. Ill health, if I can put it like that. They can package things so that you don't have to feel so bad about being unhealthy, because all you can do is you can go to the doctor and you can get a pill, you know, to make yourself feel better. And so the pharmaceutical companies have been able to, you know, roll out the agenda in their products. But people don't really see it because it's sort of packaged in a way which makes them think it's part of everyday life, you know, everyday human sort of existence. But when you look at it, you can see it's not human at all. It's more like being a robot,
like a zombie.
Yeah, like a zombie, exactly. So,
well, you know, the word pharmacy comes from the Greek word pharmakia, and that actually means sorcery. So, and I truly believe that there are spiritual things that happen when, like, people are on like Xanax. I don't know if y'all have heard of methadone. These are very strong, and these are government-based drugs. That like methadone is like synthetic heroin, and it's legal for people here just to go and say, okay, I'm on street drugs. I'd rather go pay $10 a dose and get on this, and all it does is killing people left and right, man.
Yeah. Hey, have you noticed that the names of these drugs sound like magical words, like abracadabra, Zoloft, Paxil.
Yeah, that's true, man. I'm telling
it
you.
It is true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get a drug name that sounds like a vegetable, are you? You know, you're always going to get... A lot of these drugs have X in them, don't they? Which is interesting in itself. People have been telling me about the X symbol and where that comes from. You know, and they had this... the bloody swine flu vaccine was going to be called... Pandemrix or something in this country or something. I can't remember the exact name, but it was, it's horrendous. Yeah.
Who here believes that swine flu was definitely created?
Oh, yeah, definitely created. Yeah.
What have you got? You've got four different strains of flu. You've got human flu, avian flu, and two different strains of swine flu in the exact same molecule. That does not happen in nature.
But no. this is another good one, because I wrote to the... I've got this on my website because I got very interested in the swine flu. I think like Bob, your previous guest, was saying, I really got hacked off with the swine flu thing when it came out in the UK. I was really, you know, and my wife, she had to go and get a special mask at work because of the risk of swine flu. This never happened in her career in 20 years. And I was saying, this is just utter SH1T, isn't it? And so I wrote to the Department of Health and I asked them a list of 17 questions about swine flu. And you can go and look at this on my website in the health thing, checktheevidence.com if you want to go and look at that. But the thing I wanted to mention about that particular one was I asked them who was supplying the vaccine to the British government, and they said it was Baxter. And it was
good old Stabby and the Baxter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was Glaxo was the other one. And they said that they'd signed
the vaccine. And they both have an X in their company name as well.
There you go. Isn't that weird? The thing that really got me was that I asked them this question, but the Department of Health admitted to me they signed the vaccine deals in 2007, 2 years before the swine flu outbreak. And they also said that the vaccine companies wouldn't sign the deals unless the government underwrote them for damages. In other words, the government was liable for the damages caused by any drugs that went bad on people. And they admitted that to me in a letter, and that's on my website. So to me, they were disclosing to me information which I hadn't even asked for, which to me, I read it, I could be wrong, but I read it as like they were whistleblowing to me. They were thinking, well, thank goodness somebody's asked us this question, because nobody else is asking these questions, you know. So that was quite interesting, that they were trying to whistleblow, or at least as I saw it. So we know what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if I know what's going on. I think that the man who thinks he knows everything obviously knows nothing. And the man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough.
Well, that's a very philosophical point of view. Of course, I was speaking in that specific situation there. We can see that pharmaceutical companies have got their fingers where, if we look at the way the rest of society is supposed to be geared up, they shouldn't have their fingers. That's really what I was meaning in that instance, but I take your point.
Well, I actually agree with your point. We shouldn't allow them to have fingers either. They should all be chopped off so that they can't sign any more research documents to put toxic drugs on the market.
And then all their anesthetic
like
drugs
in Riyadh.
Like, why would you take half of these drugs when the symptoms after you take them, if you have anal leakage, blah, 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 like, I don't think I want that, bro. I'm good. Nah. I'll hold off. I've got
a headache. I want to risk renal failure. We have a caller calling in. It's Tim from Wisconsin. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm glad that you mentioned before about it being, besides the spiritual war, also a chemical war, and I can't think of what all the other ones that you mentioned.
Biological.
Okay. The thing where I was glad that you saying that is because it really quite a bit gets me inside when I hear Christian people talk like as if it's just only a spiritual war. Because I just have a problem with buying into that belief, because there's also this when Christian Black guy, when I told him about it was just after I heard Max Egan, I think it was a program of his about fracking and how it's if it's not stopped, it's going to end up destroying the planet. And then after talking to that Christian Black guy about it, he says it's not fracking that's destroying the earth. It's people not coming to God. Now I probably agree that people not coming to God it would be a part of it. But to me, I just can't buy that being the whole picture. I also can't feel like having to go also after the direct causes of those things.
I'm a Christian. I totally agree with you. I'm a Christian, and I want to say this first and foremost, that Christianity that is here is not what Christ intended it to be. He wasn't in these churches and putting signs out saying, come see us or you're going to hell. Nah, that's not right. And that man you talked to may have very well been a self-righteous Christian that needs to be knocked off his horse. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That does happen.
Jesus didn't ask for 10% of what's in your wallet.
Yeah, and I agree totally. It's not just God, but the enemy that we're fighting, you can believe they have a God, and it's not the God that, you know what I'm saying? And they have power, too, through their spirituality, so I just fight spirit with spirit, but everything else, it's all one, it comes into like the perfect storm, man. All of it comes together. It's not just one thing.
Yeah. And I think this is what the tactic that I've come up with, because we're being attacked from every direction, the only thing that I've seen in nature that can actually tackle a problem like that is a cactus. It covers itself in spines from every single direction. We should adopt that tactic. For every single New World Order agenda that is in your town, your city, your state, your country, there is an activist there. There is a person there. There is a hero there just waiting to strike. Every single footfall the enemy has, we should be there as fulfilling our part in the cactus to protect the whole lot.
T-shirts coming up next week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Be a prick. Use the tactic of the cactus.
That's good stuff.
Well, I've certainly become more prickly in recent years.
You should shave, mate. Now, Tim, I wanted to thank you for your call, you actually held on for quite a long time there. Good on you, mate. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you made some good points.
Yeah. He did, eh? I liked him. A very interesting dude. Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose that sense of humour, you will go friggin' nuts. And don't think that somebody else is going to come and protect you, because once you start relying on everybody else to protect you and to do all the work about knowing what the heck is going on in your life, that's when you wind up living in bondage. You're listening. You're grooving. You're having a good time. You're smiling. You're happy. And we'll be right back after this break to continue doing so.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down.
Welcome back.
Eventually, will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about massive corruption leading to huge collapses, usually in a controlled demolition fashion. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about gravity-defying hairstyles and reason-defying smiles. My very special guests are Stephen the Voice Cook,
yes,
and
sir.
Andrew Johnson. And I think it's quite an interesting dynamic here. So what we've got is we've got the representatives from three of the English-speaking nations. I mean, maybe we should have a panel discussion one day where we also have an Australian and a Canadian and maybe an Irishman or something like that, you know? It's like an American, a British person, and a New Zealander walk into a bar.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
Well, because what's interesting is that when you talk about conspiracy theories with people from overseas, how much similarity there is between our countries. It's like there really aren't any borders anymore.
Nope. All the same legislation has been passed at roughly the same time in all of those nations that you mentioned, I think.
It seems, you know, like it was the Americans that woke me up to all of this kind of stuff. And now it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like the token Kiwi guy sort of thing, you know. Oh, yeah, it's like the coalition of the willing, you know, how they had heaps of countries that basically didn't have an army who were just there, you know, tokenistically going, yeah, we support going and invading Iraq and depleted uranium, shelling their cities.
Yeah, well, I think there's, again,
ritualist.
Then. Sorry, I was just going to say, I think there must be some type of ritualist agenda behind all of that as well, to just get people on board with the agenda. And I think that idea of this coalition of the willing was, coalition of the willing for senseless, ritualistic bloodbath and murder.
In other words, the coalition of the killing.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Uber scumbaggery. When I love about the system, though, and I don't love many things about it, is that the internet has brought us together, okay? The system brought in the internet to control us, right? And the best thing about it is it's actually freed us more than ever. And it just shows you, no matter how well planned out your agenda is, every single thing can go haywire. It's what Sun Tzu said. No battle plan has ever survived a battle. You need to, and that's why the truth movement's winning this war, because when the enemy, and I say, let's say mainstream media versus alternative media, that's the paradigm I'm trying to get at here, you know. And what the alternative media is able to do is change their tune on a dime, to cover a story instantly, to be in the thick of it right there and then, and not have to ask permission, not have any big apparatus or things to organize or equipment to sign out in the tech room or something like that. So where they are stronger is in the mass audience or whatever. But what we're stronger at is actually being in there in the middle with the audience. We know what they know. We feel what they feel. And we're much better qualified of communicating with them, better than some person who's waiting for their next Gucci handbag or trip to Tahiti to turn up.
Right? Definitely.
You know, I think the fact that you can also do things like video editing, and, you know, you can get a fairly good video camera for next to nothing now, so you can make your own little YouTube video and make your own, you know, if you've got the competence to cover a story or do an opinion piece, 5 minutes, if you've got the ability, and it's done, it's out there, and it's live. And so, yeah, I think that is one of the wrinkles in the plan of these scumbags. And I think ultimately it will be their undoing, I think.
Yeah, well, they've gotten real arrogant. And I always say, when you get too full of yourself, you get too far ahead of yourself. And how do you expose a fascist, mind you? Oh, yeah, that's right. You get them to act like it.
Mm.
And boy, oh boy, are we starting to see some very fascist behavior coming out of our countries, don't you think? I mean, Stephen, what about the US now? How do you feel about the NDAA and SOPA and all of this other assorted scumbaggery legislation? It's unbelievable. I can't even believe it, and I'm not even there.
What do you think about, you know, you said the internet, it kind of brought us all together. You know, they're trying to, right now, they're trying to make it where even Facebook, you can't Facebook out of your country. Like, I believe it was on December 22nd, probably when Congress was home for Christmas. They tried to pass a law on this, and it didn't pass because something happened with GoDaddy.com. But I'm sure that eventually they'll pull it off. They always try to, and they always. It seems like everything is so. It's a good plan takes time, critiquing, and it's like a big trap at the end. But it builds up and builds up. You know, I'm not saying we can't defeat it, but I mean, it's like so much. It's so much in depth and so much secrecy there that, like, you don't know until after the law didn't pass. You know.
Yeah, there's some of that. I think certainly with the
that includes the congressmen who don't read it before it's passed.
Exactly. Yeah, well, they're in the bag too.
They're in the bag of Starburst eating Prozac like it was M&M's. It's unbelievable. These people are just mind-controlled zombies and slaves like the rest of us, except they wear $3,000 Valentino suits, have a staff, and do pedophilia on the weekends.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. I was not expecting
that. It's
funny because
it's good, true.
Well, oh, that's it. You know, it's shocking to think of in one way, but I mean, again, a lot of these stories are coming more out into the open now, and we've seen some of these stories coming out from time to time now, and it's shocking, and I think they're having to admit it because they can't hide it anymore. And to some extent, they're thinking, well, what are you going to do about it? You might know that we run this system on corruption, bribery, and manipulating people through, you know, misdemeanors, you know, with women and with other more unsavory things, but they're letting it all hang out more, you know. And
I want to tell you a story. For an activist friend of mine, right, he's very much against these family courts, people stealing each other's kids or anything. He finds out that there's a crack dealer in his neighborhood, and that they'd been assaulting women and stuff like that, selling huge quantities out of it. So he goes around there with a baseball bat, and he cracks him over the head. And he says, "You stop doing that." And then he grabs all his stuff and flushes it down the toilet. And I said, if I ever hear that you are doing this again, if you lay a hand on anybody, if you sell anything out of this house, I'll be coming back. And the entire neighborhood did absolutely nothing to stop him. Never wow. underestimate the lone gunman.
Yeah, really. Sometimes though, you have to be in an instance. I mean, if you feel like what you have to do, be a patriot. Maybe I'm not saying become a terrorist or you know. I know they're probably listening. No, but I'm saying it is. Sometimes it's within yourself to define what is right, man. If it's a one-on-one circumstance, I'm glad he didn't kill the guy and all. But I mean, I can't say that it was wrong, you know, because look what was happening.
Yeah. See, and this is the thing, taking personal ownership of responsibilities. Just because you don't have to do something doesn't mean that you can automatically be comfortable with the choice of doing nothing.
Exactly.
Doing nothing makes me feel very uncomfortable a lot of the time, not when I know that I'm needed and I have the power to make something good happen. Okay.
You guys know that they're actually giving seminars to police officers in America now, preparing them for martial law. That's actually happening. Like they're telling them, oh, well, this probably isn't going to happen, but we're going to give you a seminar just in case this happens. You know where to be and what to do. Yeah.
And how to round up people into cattle cars.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them, don't worry about it. Take a Zoloft.
Yeah, and you know, actually, I'm from Alabama. And in Montgomery, Alabama, there's a Southern Poverty Law Group. They actually
I hate those scumbags.
I'm telling you, dude. And they're actually labeling all these people that are domestic terrorists. I mean, are you aware of what
people wearing? Wasn't it people wearing blue jeans? People who frequent conspiracy websites, things like that. Those are the terrorists now.
I mean, an Oath Keeper got his baby stripped from an Oath Keeper. That's a vet. I mean, he had done. I believe he went to Korea or something for America, and he took an oath to keep the Constitution no matter what happens. And now they are labeled a domestic terrorist group, and he got his baby taken from him by social services. I believe it was in Texas, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, see, this is the problem. These people are ruthless, killing, sociopathic scum, and you had best understand what lengths they will go through and what evil they will commit. And don't think about this in a religious concept. Evil is real. Murdering babies is evil. It's pretty straightforward. Just a decent person that doesn't believe in God knows the difference between right and wrong. And you know what the thing is about evil trying to take over or whatever? The only thing that's necessary for it to succeed is for good men to do nothing. I want to thank you very much, guys, for joining me on the show today. I think it's actually been quite an extraordinary little wee panel discussion.
Good.
I enjoyed it.
Yes, it'd be good.
And, we'll get your websites and your archives up ASAP, ladies and gentlemen. You can access those at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com/2012.html. That's the little archive page there. And also at guerrillamedia.co.nz. See you again sometime, hopefully, if we don't all get exterminated first.